Hey guys, welcome back to Vertical Momentum. I'm your host, Richard Kaufman, also known as the Comeback Coach. Guys, you know that we always have kick-ass guests come on the show. And this gentleman we're about to have on is probably the ultimate kick-ass guest that we've had on our show. So make sure you subscribe that and hit that notification bell. My brother, Zach, he's a podcast host. He's got a book coming out on Veterans Day. Nobody's supposed to know yet. He's a combat veteran. He's a law enforcement, prior law enforcement, everything that I love. He's changing the world. He's changing lives. And he's one of the best people that I've ever had the pleasure of talking to. Zach, welcome to the show, brother.
Oh, man, I appreciate you having me. It is my honor and my pleasure.
I'm so excited to have on you. And like I said, prior before you logged on, my family bleeds blue. My daughter was actually a policewoman last year. So this family bleeds blue. Even our light out front is blue because we love our police officers, firefighters, EMTs, and veterans. And you're a veteran. So, I mean, you have my whole heart, and I love everything you're doing. Tell us a little bit about you, where you come from, and how you became the man that you are today.
Oh, man, that is a big, long question, and I'll try to keep it short. I was born and raised here in Atlanta, where the new Braves Stadium is built over in Smyrna. Obviously, winning the World Series last year was huge for me. I went to the World Series a couple of games here in Atlanta, but born and raised here in Atlanta in Smyrna, which is also where I ended up going back in policing. Went through life kind of just aimlessly as a teen. Was homeschooled, middle school, high school, but knew one thing I wanted to do was not be locked down into an office job. Funny how that works out because I'm stuck in an office job these days, business owner, but you know, we all have an officer of our own sort. And, you know, the one thing I realized is I wanted to serve. I wanted to give back to my local community. So I became a police officer, like you mentioned. I did all the SWAT, narcotics, gang investigation stuff, did all the kind of quote unquote fun stuff. And then actually left that at 28 to join the military. I was transitioning, wanting to serve on a higher level. So transitioned into the military, went through OCS. I went on the dark side as an officer, infantry officer, then deployed to Afghanistan in 2019 with the Green Berets. And fast forward, getting medically discharged due to an injury that I sustained over there and found about a year later, actually, it was discovered while I was going through Captain's Career Course for promotion. And then here we are running some businesses here in Atlanta and then trying to make something of myself without the uniform on.
So what is it like, you know, going from, you know, kicking in doors with SWAT, doing all that good stuff, and then going to be an 11 bang bang? What was that thought process thinking, you know, going and joining the military? You could have chose something a lot easier. You could have chose maybe intelligence. Why would you decide to go to be the door kicker?
Man, I'm not that smart. I'm kidding. Joking aside, I went on the 11 Alpha side. And on that side, you're more, it's like a chessboard, right? I'm the one maneuvering the pieces. I wanted to lead and test my leadership. When I was in law enforcement, I went through the Dale Carnegie Academy here in Atlanta. That was my first taste of leadership. I was passed over for promotions for years. I was hard-nosed, young, arrogant, couldn't work well with anybody. So they sent me to the Dale Carnegie Academy, and I went back and actually taught the next cohort, but learned a lot. I'm actually sitting right here on my desk. I still have, and this was about 10 years ago, Dale Carnegie's golden book with all of his amazing lessons and just snippets and things that I've taken over the years. And it kind of spurned me to want to lead on a bigger level. You know, leadership by my definition is influence, right? So if you can influence guys, and I say guys, I did not have any females with me. I had about 50 guys assigned to me in Afghanistan. So if you can influence guys to move by saying two words under fire, literally being shot at. I mean, in the first month, we lost two guys. So if you can influence guys under fire, that was my thinking, then you're a damn good leader. There's so much more that goes into it. It's a little bit of an ignorant thought to begin with, because careful what you ask for. But overall, that was my thought. Let me go serve on a larger scale.
Now, you know, that book is probably one of my greatest books, because about a year ago, once me and JLD decided what we were doing, where we were heading, I wanted to get into mindset. and I wanted to go deep. I wanted to find out, and everybody talks about Napoleon Hill. Well, I want to find out who he learned from. And then, of course, I got Dale Carnegie, you know, How to Win Friends and Influence People. So, you know, like you said, if you're a leader, like even, you know, my friend Gary Vaynerchuk even talks about that, the best type of leadership is to actually care. You know, like when I became an NCO, I believed in my NCO creed. I lived it. I cared about my guys. And they knew, you know, he may, you know, Sarge may be an asshole, but I know he cares about me and he really cares about me as a person. So talk about that, you know, it doesn't sound macho, but I think sometimes we, you know, as leaders, we really need to care about the people that are underneath us and they're not just another billet slot.
Yeah, and it's an interesting dichotomy because I recognized as I got higher in rank and you start getting removed from the frontline soldier, that care, I'm not going to say it shifts, but it presents itself in a very different way. My goal is never to get above captain. I wanted to be a commander. I wanted to have 150 guys assigned to me. I never wanted to lose touch, right, with those frontline guys, those Joes. And I think care is a very interesting thing. You have to care. Even Jocko Willink, I mean, I love his book. I talk about it probably way too much. Extreme Ownership, but also The Dichotomy of Leadership. Those two books hand in hand, you know, without one, I think it's an incomplete thought. But yeah, with both, you understand the power of ownership and caring about your guys by owning their mistakes, because it's your mistakes, and taking ownership of that. But also The Dichotomy of Leadership talked about maintaining accountability. You don't just take ownership of a mess up. You also create the accountability to make sure that that doesn't happen again, right? So I think caring isn't necessarily let's give each other a hug and sing kumbaya. Now, there were times in Afghanistan we had to do that, especially as we lost guys, but caring can be that accountability piece, right? I think if you truly care, you can say the hard thing to that person you care about. So for me, that's kind of how it presented itself. Like you said, the sergeant that chews your butt and puts that boot up your ass, booty, excuse me. I don't know, are we allowed to cuss on here? Let me censor myself because we're live.
This is military-centric show, brother.
Oh, man. So, you know, that sergeant that put his boot up your ass, you know, there are forms of caring. But one thing I learned from Dale Carnegie is you have to understand the message, not the way it's presented. And that goes back to like communication. So when the sergeant puts a boot up your ass, understand what's the message. It's probably to save your life, right? Especially in Afghanistan and SWAT. I had those incidents. I had several times where somebody put a boot up my ass and I'm like, ah, F you, Sarge. But in reality, it was like for betterment of myself to keep me safe. So I think care goes in a lot of different ways, and it's kind of on the individual to show that, but also receive it accordingly.
And, you know, for me, like my guys knew that I would run for a wall through them. And every time a new guy would come in on my tank, I'd say, listen, you got one fuck up. That's it. You get one, you know, because everybody screws up one time. I said, the only time it doesn't apply is if you lie to me. That's the only time I'm going to nail your ass to a wall. And usually they're like, all right, I get one fuck up and I'm okay. So, I think leadership is a lot like that. Because like I was talking to Stu Scheller on the show Friday, I had him, and his book, Crisis of a Command, just came out. And he said, you know, sometimes once you've been in the military and you start getting, you know, above captain, it's kind of like you start moving away from your guys and you start getting into the big picture or the big army. And we kind of forget where we come from. Did you feel that way once you start moving up in the ranks?
I never really started feeling that way because I knew I wasn't going to last past captain, or my goal was never to go past that point where, because you saw it happening. All of a sudden you get major and it's like the stick instead of the boot gets shoved up your ass and you stop caring, or maybe you start caring in a different capacity. From my perspective, even on that level, I saw a lack of care and concern. Even coming back from Afghanistan, it's actually really interesting. Coming back from Afghanistan, the way we exfilled back into the United States was obviously in stages. As the 82nd replaced us, I deployed with 3rd ID out of Savannah here in Georgia. Yep. as 82nd replaced us, you know, you'd go in waves. So you'd send one squad as a squad came in, essentially. And I ended up being the last guy on the ground. By the time I got back on the ground here in Atlanta, or in Savannah, from the time I was back on the ground to the time I was back on my sofa was 5 days. There was no transition piece, and all my soldiers were already gone. So I knew that was coming. Like, I didn't see some of my soldiers because we weren't active duty. Once we got back, we were actually attached to the National Guard. So once we got back and we were part of that component with 3rd ID, most of my guys went back home to their home station, right? Not at Fort Stewart. Knowing that was coming down the pipe, I actually wrote a letter, the tag at Stewart, said, hey, can we extend our orders 30 days? Give me 30 days to have my guys all together and prep us to get released back, because it's different than active duty, a little bit different than active duty. Our train up was very much active duty. We had a train up of, you know, 4 or 5 months before we deployed. So, I mean, we'd been together for, at that point, I mean, well over a year. And then by the time I get back, everybody's gone and they're back with wives and spouses and kids and family. And, you know, now we look at it and I look at the ripple effect attached to that quote unquote lack of care. Cause obviously I wasn't given that 30 days. We have a couple divorces, a couple arrests, a couple overdoses, a couple DUIs, near suicides, myself included. There's so much fallout because we're trained to go. We're not trained to come back. And when you go over, I mean, it's one of those, you train yourself with the mindset, you know, tie a bow on what you got here, because recognize you're probably not coming back, especially with what we were doing with the Green Berets. It was a different world. So a lot of us just had that mindset. We weren't afraid of going. We were afraid of coming back. And I don't think upper level leadership recognized that. I mean, they weren't on the ground doing what we were doing, right? So when upper level leadership doesn't recognize that part of caring, because the care shouldn't happen just in country. It should happen when you come back. And I think there's a huge gap there in the veteran community.
And, you know, I had General Petraeus on the show and I said, sir, you give us 6 months to train up. Why don't you give us 6 months to train down? And I think, you know, a lot of us, the whole debacle that happened with the last Afghanistan pullout, a lot of veterans took their lives. But I think, you know, when we get out, it's kind of like, all right, it's like you can't train a horse that's trained to run like a thoroughbred. You know, to all of a sudden become just a pony going around driving kids in a circus. And I think that's the way we go when we're in the military. We're high speed. There's no drag. We're on the go 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And then, like you said, 5 days later, you're sitting at your couch going, holy shit, what do I do now?
That's crazy. And just, sorry to interrupt that piece of it. No. I had a dozen 18, 19-year-olds. At that point, I already owned a couple of businesses, so I knew what I was coming back to, right? But I had 18, 19-year-olds that had no freaking clue of life besides the military, right? That's a complete dishonor to them. What are they going to do? I had 10 years of professional experience before the military, so I knew how to land. Didn't do a great job of it, but I at least had experience in it. And these kids didn't. That is such I go on for days about that piece. I'll digress, but it frustrates me, to say the least.
I definitely want to get in deeper real quick, but I just want to thank our sponsors. Without them, the show wouldn't run. I want to thank Operation Veteran Freedom. If you're a veteran and you want to start a business, check out OVF. It's actually a free Facebook group, and it will teach you even how to start a business from ground up to having your own digital assets. So definitely check them out, OVF. They're two veterans, and they're both disabled veterans. So they're just paying it forward. Also, guys, if you love coffee, check out this coffee. It's called Vertical Momentum Coffee. Twice the amount of caffeine. Tastes a lot better than the Army coffee was. But the best thing is 100% of the proceeds go to help veterans struggling with PTSD and homelessness, especially after they get out of the military. And then the last one is StreamYard. If you guys want to start your own StreamYard show, I got a coupon for you to check it out. So let's talk about what we were just talking about. I want to get in deeper. Because say, you know, you have an 18, 19-year-old kid. He spends 12 months in country. The rules, totally different rules. You're taught, they're totally different. You're learning survival mode. You're learning, you know, you might have to possibly take somebody's life at 18, 19 years old. Not only that, but I tell everybody, they don't realize it, that I was 17 when I joined, and I had to sign my insurance over in case I got killed. That's a mind fuck right there at 17, 18 year olds, kids. So what do you, you know, what is it like when a kid gets home, 18, 19, been 12 months, they've been outside the wire plenty of times, seen a lot of shit, and then you put them back in the classroom in college with these other 18-year-old kids, they don't fit in. You know what I'm saying? And there's nowhere, there's really nobody, there's no way to go, you know, because those 18, 19-year-old kids, you know, the biggest thing they had was driving their dad's BMW last weekend to a party. They don't understand, well, I've been in Afghanistan the last 12 years trying to stay alive. So how does that correlate for these 18, 19-year-old kids that you saw?
I have no idea. You know, as a leader, I think that was something that things I wasn't necessarily prepped for as a leader, right? I wanted to test my leadership capabilities, but at that point, oh Lordy, I was 31, 32, coming back, and my relatability factor attached to these young, quote unquote kids, right? I mean, at this point, they're grown ass men. Yeah. It was a struggle, and getting that voice, that's really where I feel like delegation as a leader comes impactful, right? Who's that one like enlisted guy? Who's that E5 that everybody listens to? You know, the one guy that influences the entire platoon. And if you piss him off, you're fucked as a leader.
That was me.
Yeah. So you would be that guy I'd go to, right? And usually the E5 is going to be a little bit younger, that in between my age and that 18, 19-year-old. You know, my guys, I was fortunate. My guys respected me different than that butter bar, that brand new 21-year-old lieutenant that had no idea what he was doing, right? Which is why we got the mission set that we got that was very different than the rest. We went under Freedom Sentinel when President Trump was still in office. And our ROI... very different, very kinetic. Every 4 days, move to contact was literally our mission operation. So very different in 2019 than what a lot of people had seen in the 2000s, or at least the 20 teens. So I would find that E5. Hey, what can you go tell our guys? How do you relate to these guys? Because you were a little bit newer. How can you teach them to get back into real life? Right? Because they're struggling with something similar. Whereas relatability factor wasn't necessarily there. So I think finding that key cog, that key sergeant that could maintain that was like super key for me. And it's all about, you know, lower level leaders and how to foster that leadership with them to build leaders and not just build soldiers.
Okay. So now I have another question because as we talked about before I came on the show, I got hurt on duty. I lost my vision. So if you can't see, you can't shoot, we don't need you. Medically discharged me on Memorial Day 2012. That was the day that I attempted suicide. Because if I'm not Sergeant Kaufman, if I'm not the ultimate soldier, who's Richard? And I didn't know, and it scared the shit out of me. And thank God it didn't go through. But now, while you're in the military, I'm sure you've seen a bunch of guys lose their career, lose an arm, lose a leg, and know that their career was over. What did you say to them? And then how did you realize when you came to realization when you got hurt, well, my career is over too? What is that like to having to, one, talk to a soldier that's lost their career, and now you being that soldier that has lost the career?
Yeah, it's interesting because I had one soldier in particular that it was tough. He was also a cop. So he went back into a very similar job that I had before leaving law enforcement. But he worked narcotics. He did some undercover work. He did gang investigation, very similar to what I was doing. When he came back, he was actually on the first operation we lost guys. He was actually third in line. The first two were the two that died first, Will and Joey. So he was the number three. And obviously, when you see that happen and we get ambushed the way we did, I don't know how you recover from that, right? I don't know how, as a leader, you help that person recover. But what ended up happening, you know, he was sent back to a sofa, went right back onto the police force and kept doing his daily job and buried everything. That led to a drug addiction, drug arrest, overdose. honestly, I couldn't. I was almost mad at him. I'm like, bro, what are you doing? You know better than this, right? And it actually took me getting injured, which is honestly, I guess, a blessing looking at it now, to be able to maintain or not maintain, but gain that relatability, right? And understand what he was going through. Because, I mean, obviously, you overdose, you get arrested, you're going to end up getting kicked out of the military 9 times out of 10, right? So he felt like no matter how much we were there for him, with him, trying to support, he wasn't one of us anymore. And that mindset, you know, the isolation mindset, I didn't understand until I went through myself and my injury. It was tough, man. It was crazy. I went to career course about a year. Let's see, it was 2020. So almost a year after I got back from Afghanistan, I was in career course on Fort Benning. If anybody knows Fort Benning, Georgia, terrible place. Terrible. but it was on Fort Benning, Georgia. And I was there. It was actually the first time in my entire life I lived alone. Wasn't living with the parents. My parents lived with me for a little while, spouses, girlfriends, roommates. It was the first time I lived alone completely. And the silence was deafening. And it messed with my head so bad. The alcohol was up at that point. I hadn't dealt with my own stuff. I hadn't even thought about therapy, didn't care about therapy. I just trashed a marriage, sabotaged a marriage. So went through a divorce, blamed everybody but myself, right? And then 2 months into career course, I went down to do a push-up and dislocated my thumb, my left hand, because the muscle had atrophied so far. Come to find out after battery testing, I have nerve damage in my elbow, and it shut down the nutrition and nutrients and whatnot going into my hand. So the muscle atrophy, normally your hand goes numb first. Mine did not. The atrophy happened. And then when it dislocated and I popped it back into place, it all went numb from the forearm, like the elbow down. So the surgery happened. It ended up being a complicated surgery. They burned off way too many nerve endings and way too many blood vessels. And a 4-hour surgery turned into 8. One surgeon turned into 2 to save the arm, yada, yada, yada. But that's like the end of the career, right? The week before that, knowing how bad and significant the specialist is, like, this is the worst atrophy I've seen in a hand from this type of injury. Knowing my career was ending, I was at the end of a dock with a pistol in my mouth. I wasn't going to go through the surgery. I didn't want to deal with that bullshit. Honestly, I didn't want to go through the recovery. I didn't want to have the uniform taken. You know, I was only in the military at that point. I'd only been in the military about 4 years, but I'd had a uniform for 12 at that point, with the police uniform included. So I'd been serving for 12 years. And as a cop, I knew exactly how not to be found. So I had the pistol in my mouth. I was ready to go, shot off one last text. And that the response was, hey, the cops are on their way. I called them. Don't do it. My text was, you're going to be taken care of for the rest of your life. Don't worry about me anymore. And then I ran from the cops for 6 hours and hid in bushes. And the former cop is now the criminal. And I got so fucking mad at that person. It's my ex-wife. I got so mad at that person. That anger, that rage displaced onto hers, what honestly saved my life, saved me from pulling the trigger that day. I thought that was rock bottom, ended up not being rock bottom. Went through the surgery, had the exit exam for career course the next day, passed it high as a kite on the nerve block, and then graduated 2 days later, moved back to Atlanta to nobody, nothing. I had no house. I had no home. Thankfully, a veteran buddy of mine, a Navy guy. I love to make fun of the Navy, but he makes it tough because he saved me. He let me move in, sleep on the sofa. And he asked me a question one day that first week I was back. And he's like, hey, man, you've gone through all this stuff. You got the MBA. You got the education. You got the credentials. You did all this external learning. Have you ever taken the time to look internal and learn about yourself? You don't have the uniform to rely on. You're not Officer Knight, Lieutenant Knight, Captain Knight. You're not that anymore. Yeah. If you're taking the time to look internally, learn about yourself, and love things about yourself. And I'm like, bro, I love me some me. The quip, right? I love me some me. Excuse me. And what he said is like, he said, go upstairs, look in the mirror, tell yourself you love yourself. Look yourself in the eyes and tell yourself you love yourself. Went upstairs and couldn't do it. I crashed. I literally balled up on the floor, had an anxiety attack, could not even look at myself and tell myself I love myself. That was 18 months ago. Fast forward, therapy, a lot of self-development, personal work, looking inside, morning routine, you name it, and the things I've tried to now get in a place where It's not that the weight's not there anymore. I've learned how to carry it. I've gotten stronger. So going back to the original question, what would I say to the soldier now? Look inside yourself. Look past the uniform. It's not your identity, right? Look past yourself. Learn something about yourself that you really love. Learn something about yourself that you can fall in love with yourself again. Date yourself, essentially, right? And find that love for yourself again, and then talk about it. Tell people what you love about yourself. Let everybody know why you're amazing, because you are.
Now, as you see, I'm writing stuff down because I got a traumatic brain injury. So if I don't write it down, I'm not going to remember to ask. Now, like after I lost my vision and after I had my TBI and PTSD and all that, all the other acronyms, came to a point where I had to realize, okay, this is my new normal. So what was it like having your hand all jacked up, realizing, okay, this is my new normal. This is what I'm having to deal with. And I'm going to deal with it. But I had to accept the new normal. What was that like?
Brother, I denied it forever. This is not the new normal. I used to be a CrossFit coach. I was a fitness instructor, SWAT, infantry, like the bang out, kick the door in, like rough and tough, right? The alpha guy. I can do anything and everything I want to do. I denied it, which is where, you know, sent at the end of the dot came from. I denied that possibility. I'm not a shadow of myself anymore for a long time. And what that actually came out in me was, as people told me, you'll be fine, you'll be okay, you'll get through this. And then I went to tie my shoe and couldn't tie my damn shoes anymore. I got angry and I pointed a finger at everybody around me and literally, you're a liar. Stop telling me that. I hate you. Stop telling me that. And it actually got me so angry at the world where I started isolating myself. I started putting myself alone because I got so mad about people telling me it'll be okay. Well, then come over and tie my damn shoes, right? I couldn't even put my name tag on my nice uniform to graduate because I didn't have the dexterity to do it. And you're going to tell me I'm going to be fine? So I denied it. I denied, like, there's nothing else there, right? Which is what led me to that point. There's nothing else there for me because I'm not anything anymore. Once I kind of got through that self-development, through that work and found different pieces, what I recognize is I still run 3 miles a day. My legs still work, right? There are other pieces. I can't ride a motorcycle anymore. I can't hit a golf ball anymore, things I really used to enjoy. But one thing that I did start as part of my morning routine is I learned the piano. I have it sitting over here to my left. I learned the piano. I can't feel my ring finger. Can't feel my pinky. The grip strength is still gone, but classical music was always one of those things that calmed me. If I was having anxiety, I'd throw in headphones, listen to classical music, do some breath work. And I had a revelation one day, like, what if I could create instead of just listen to the music? What if I could actually play it? What would that feel like? And I went and bought a piano one day and went through, actually met a veteran that was in a really hard time. We had a nice little session. He's now in my community, part of my community, attached to different things we're doing here in Atlanta. So fate pushed me toward this revelation. That day I got the piano home and played for 6 hours, tried to learn, still can't read music to save my life, but I'm learning, right? My brain's still solid. My hand hurts, it cramps. I can't play phenomenally, but within the first couple of weeks, I learned a piece of Bach where I'm sitting there playing, right? That piece of it, I found something new to challenge myself with. I found something new that was going to push me to my limits. Some days it makes me hella angry when my hand cramps or my hand hurts. Getting back in the gym, I can't lift like I could anymore, right? Can't do a deadlift or a clean like I used to, but I can sit here and play the piano in the morning. I can do these other aspects and found new things to fall in love with that help me through all of that. And that's that dichotomy to me, right? That's that shift of don't necessarily accept that you're broken. I realized I was broken. My arm's broken. My head's broken. That was empowering to me, if that makes sense. Like, recognizing something was broken means, as veterans, we can freaking fix it. We know how to fix some shit, especially you enlisted guys. Like, y'all could MacGyver some stuff, right? Yeah. But you have to have the awareness to recognize something's broken. And once you do, you come up with a solution. And that was a turning point for me, recognizing what was broken. Now let me go fix it and shift it and find different aspects of what I can do now that I couldn't do before.
And, you know, that, and I love that because it sounds like when I first lost my vision, I picked up the guitar And I figured, you know, let me learn how to play, you know, in case I go totally blind, at least I could do that. But it became very cathartic. So, and now I'm the world's okayest guitar player. But something that you said earlier, I want to go back. You talk about the mirror, because, you know, I love my friend David Goggins, and I love when he talks about the accountability mirror. You know, that once we have to, we learn to be accountable to the people that look back at us in the mirror, is when we can actually start to become free. Now, I wasn't a Grant Cardone guy until I learned the story, got to meet him and chat and all that stuff. But the biggest thing I got about his book, was his latest book, was from this point on in your life, for anybody that's listening to this, everything is your fault. Whether you're winning, whether you're losing, it's your fault. And if you start taking ownership of it, even losses or wins, that's when you truly become free. So, and I believe that you have to be aware in order to become free. So is that something you agree with?
I definitely believe awareness is beyond necessary. You have to have the awareness, right? No different than the awareness of something was broken, so I could start to fix it. I love Goggins' book. I don't love his mindset, honestly. I won't go too hard in on him if you love him, but I actually push back about a lot of his teachings. I don't think they're healthy for the normal person, or even for the veteran that can't anymore, right? You know, Can't Hurt Me, such a great book, such a great message. But at the end of the day, something hurt me, right? Yeah. So if you have this stoicism about you, nothing can hurt me. Well, false. Look at his life. Fractured feet. He goes out and breaks his feet every time he does something. He pisses blood every other day, right? Yeah. Things are hurting him, and he doesn't have the awareness himself to see where is he going to be in 10 years, 20 years, 30 years? What is he teaching the people in our community, the civilian community that sees what he's doing? Like, oh, that's badass. I want to be like him. Well, you have to recognize there are points where we need to be like him. Afghanistan, great example. SWAT, great example. There are points in my life where I've had to be in that mindset. But at the end of the day, that could lead to a very toxic road, a very toxic mindset in yourself without, and lead you away from that awareness, personally, in my opinion. Right.
Yeah.
I won't yell too much about Goggins, but he's got a bigger name than I do so far. But he's one of those, like, I just don't correlate with that message personally.
Right. And I get it. Like I said, that's why I love to have people. I love to get everybody's opinions, because, you know, everybody jams with somebody else or somebody, you know. So, but, you know, one thing I want to definitely talk about is, like we talked about before we started on the show. Once you get out of the military, and like my friend Sergeant Nick Valentine talks about, the military doesn't give a shit about you. The phone stops ringing. You no longer have a mission or a paycheck most of the time. And then you're at home sitting at the house on the couch, you know, and wondering, all right, now what? So I believe if a person that gets out of the military finds a purpose again, finds a mission again, they're less, I mean, not all the time, but they're less likely to commit suicide if they have a mission bigger than themselves, whether that's starting a business, because a lot of people that watch this are veterans entrepreneurs. So, you know, talk to us a little bit about that, you know, because I'm a big fan of the guys from Bunker Labs, Dean Bunch, who's an amazing dude. Because I believe that if a person starts a business, you know, if they have a goal, they're less likely to take their own lives if they're working towards something, right? Correct?
100% agree with you, and on all fronts. The military doesn't give a shit. My discharge paperwork, to give you an example, when I got out of the captain's career course, they told me to get the surgery while on career course. They told me everything would be set after career course. I lost insurance for a month after I graduated. Had to pay $5,000 out of pocket for a specialist. They gave me orders and insurance for 3 months. Then that medical paperwork got screwed up, so I lost insurance for another month. They gave me 3 more months after that. And then I was ghosted. No phone calls, no text messages, no email responses for 4 months. 4 months and nothing happened. I couldn't afford the specialist anymore. So out of the year of recovery I was supposed to get, I got at best 5 months of it. They don't give a shit. Once you're done, I hate to say it, but like, holy shit, they don't give a shit. And you have to delve out on your own. And I'm technically still in. I'm still going through this discharge process. I have a suspend date of October 3rd, like a couple days from now, where they're supposed to have paperwork done that I haven't heard anything about in over 6 weeks. I went all the way to a two-star general and at my congressman to get something moving because they truly do not care. Once you're no longer part of their matrix and their check the block bullshit, it's over for you, right? The interesting part about finding a mission, I want to stress this point a little bit. When I was going through career course, when I was at my darkest, I owned 6 companies and I started 3 in 2020. And those 3, I scaled to 155 countries in 8 months. So throughout 2020, I became an international business owner almost overnight. And I absolutely hated myself the entire time. I was active duty again. I was COVID response here in Georgia, career course during that time. Absolutely hated myself, refused to deal with my own shit, and buried myself in work, buried myself in business. It's not that I wasn't busy enough. It's that I was still had the room to think. Like I told you, my mind, the silence was deafening. So when we're silent and you get in the bottom of a bottle of bourbon, things start coming out. You start hearing the scratching at the door from the skeletons in the closet, right? So I just work. I didn't eat for over 7 days. I developed bulimia attached to it because I felt like there's so many pieces of I don't deserve to even have this food because I couldn't even bring my own guys back, right? This family, I didn't celebrate holidays because they couldn't celebrate holidays anymore because they didn't come home. There's so many pieces of guilt attached to what I was dealing with. And as I went through therapy, what I recognized and it was explained to me that there are several different segments of PTSD. It's not just the reactionary flinching part of PTSD that a lot of us have. There's actually a piece of PTSD that is avoidance. You avoid all that stuff because you don't want to deal with it. You're taught to lock it up, continue mission, press forward. And I truly believe in order to lead others, you have to lead yourself. To effectively lead others, you have to lead yourself. If you're not going through a self-mastery practice, if you're not getting your mind right, your business, and I just incorporated my 7th about 2 weeks ago, your businesses will fail and stall because you will become that choke point if you don't deal with your own stuff. Because your mindset will feed into that business world. You'll start sabotaging and you'll start thinking you're not worthy of success. You'll start thinking that you don't deserve the level of success that your true potential can bring you to, and you'll start sabotaging it. So deal with that mindset piece. You mentioned Bunker Labs. I've been involved with them for a few years here in Atlanta. I'm the marketing chair for another veteran nonprofit here in Atlanta. And then the one I just incorporated is a veteran nonprofit called Advancing the Line for Veterans, ATL Vets. But it focuses on accomplishing things for veteran business owners. So it's kind of a correlation of Bunker Labs. The chapter here in Atlanta is not very strong anymore post-COVID. And I'm tired of seeing nonprofits and organizations pass us along like we're the freaking VA over again, right? Are you actually accomplishing something for veterans? Or are you just waving the flag on the NFL field saying, yeah, we're accomplishing things for veterans and we'll walk a veteran onto the field and we can all applaud them? All right, where's that $300 million going that the NFL gets every year?
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
I feel like there's a piece of it where we get exposed for being a talking point. And nobody ever actually does anything at the end of the day. And that's not what veterans are about. So yeah. This new project is all about what are we doing on the ground on a tactical level so that we can actually show, hey, this is how we're advancing the line for veterans. We're not passing the buck anymore. And I think that's a mindset that once you get your head right, stop having other people pass the buck. Stand up, do the right thing. Tell them to do the right thing. Stand on those values, those virtues that we got out of the military that we stand on as individuals that we've internalized. And make sure the right thing's getting done by you, by the military. That's why I went to my congressman. The military isn't treating me right. So I'm going to talk about it. I'm going to say so. I'm not going to hide that piece of it, right? I'm not going to continue to have the buck passed so I don't get treated well. I'm an O2 promotable that should be a captain right now. How are you treating the E1, E2 if you're treating me this way? That's not fair. So stand up for what's right, attached. I'll go off on a tangent on this piece because it is frustrating me. I'm tired of seeing veterans...
And I'm also seeing, because I think you're like our 510th interview on the show, something stupid like that. But say anywhere from a 21-year-old to a 35-year-old guy gets out of the military. They don't want to go to the VFW and get drunk. They don't want to go to man vets. You know, they want to join, you know, places like Irreverent Warriors. You know, they want to get involved in stuff nowadays. So, you know, it's not like when, you know, when I first got out, it's been almost 12 years now. You know, oh, just join the VFW. And then I went there. I don't drink. I quit drinking 30 years ago. So I'm like, what do you do? And they're like, oh, we just sit here and drink and talk. I'm like, that's why the VFWs are dying and vets are dying. You know, veterans that get out now, you know, especially, you know, post 9/11, they want to do stuff. They want to be involved. So I think something like what you're talking about, I think that's going to save a lot of lives. You know, just that little piece right there.
And I think, first off, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that feedback, because I agree. I've been recruited by so many VFWs, American Legions. Hey, we want a younger demographic. And then you go and sit in a smoky room and hear World War II stories. I get it. Those can be fun. You can be entertaining. You can learn a lot from that older generation. But to your point, that's not addressing. I'm 34. That's not addressing a Gen Zer, right? That's not addressing the millennial and our desires. I actually started two things last month. And this is where I encourage people to do. If you don't have anything besides a VFW, go start something. Like if you maybe you don't want to be a business owner yet, but you can start a meetup. I started two. I actually had my second one, second Battle Brews last night. I have a once a month meetup, Battle Brews. Yeah, it's at a fun brewery, outdoor bar, rooftop bar. We had a little bit of a conversation about your voice as a veteran. Then we played like water pong. You don't have to drink. We had several guys not drinking, but it was just like community, right? The second adventure or the second piece I started was called Vetlana View. Vetlana is the marketing, the one I'm in the marketing chair with. And Vetlana Views, we're doing a hike once a month. Yeah. In November, we're going to Mercedes-Benz Stadium and we're doing a workout at the stadium and then getting a private tour. People will help you along that path. You just have to do it. You know, if you don't have those types, to your point, they want something to engage with as veterans. We want to do something. Community isn't sitting around a bar smoking a cigar anymore. It's activities and having fun.
Like I had, they asked me, well, what would draw you in? You know, for me, they asked me, what would draw, you know, my demographic? I'm 53 now, so I'm a little bit older. But if I would say, listen, guys, if you would just set up like five TVs and a couple Xboxes and have a Halo tournament, you'd have a bunch of people showing up.
You know, it's so funny, dude. So there's a guy here, Dr. Tepper, here in Atlanta. He's not a veteran, but he wrote a documentary. He's trying to get screened. Called Love After War. It's about veteran intimacy after combat. He can't get anybody to screen it. Nobody wants to talk about it, right? But he owns this esports venue here in Atlanta. Our next Vetlana Views is actually going to be a video game night. We're going to go over there. We're going to hang out, play some video games. I grew up on Halo. So much fun. And just break away from the monotony. It doesn't have to be, let's go hike a mountain. Some of us can't do that very well anymore. But we can sit there and like bullshit, right? Like that's what it is. It's like just where can you go and BS and have some community. So it's funny you bring up video games. Says literally just got it scheduled last night with him. So we're gonna go play some like Mario Kart, go play some like old school Donkey Kong, something like that, just to like relive some of the fun stuff that we did as kids.
Yeah, I mean, because for me, like I remember some of the greatest memories were being on a deployment and there's like 15 guys around one TV screen watching a movie. And it was some of the, we had nothing. We were sharing sodas and chips, but we had everything. And I think a lot of us, we kind of forget that camaraderie. We really miss that. I miss that so much. And I think that's why I attempted suicide, because, you know, I felt so alone. And I actually miss those 3 a.m. bullshit sessions on the top of a tank in the middle of the desert. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So now let's talk about business personally, because like I said, a lot of people that watch us are vetrepreneurs. And a lot of us, we get out, we want to start a t-shirt company, hat, liquor, coffee. I did 3 out of the 4, so I can't really talk much. But we don't, like my friend Stephen Eugene Kuhn talks about, if you don't have a business plan, you don't have a business. You have a hobby. And a lot, you know, but then somebody else I had on the show was like, my business plan was make money, and you wrote it on a napkin. So what is your opinion on, you know, having an SOP, but also, you know, having a business plan before you start that business?
Oh, Stephen Kuhn, man, I haven't heard that name in a couple of years. That vetpreneur tribe that he still has on, I met him years ago. Him and Lane Vallone are some interesting guys doing some big things.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I'm a balance in between. My first business was launched in basic training on a napkin, 100%. Wrote out a business plan. Still have that notebook to this day with a DFAC napkin crushed in it because that's all I had. I just knew I didn't want to go back into law enforcement the way in 2016, 2017, the dynamic towards law enforcement. I didn't want to go back into that world. I was no longer effective, even in my own backyard. So I knew I wanted to do something different. I started my first business there. I think there's a balance. These days, I'm not involved in six of my businesses. I set up operations attached to them. Haven't exited yet. I don't want to sell, but I'm not really involved, so I can focus on ATL Vets. Outside of ATL Vets, I'm a fractional COO. So I do operations work. I help people establish businesses, which is why I want to start ATL Vets, focus on veteran business owners. So we can do that piece. I don't want to give a fish to a veteran. I'm not going to give you money to go start a business, but we're going to accomplish some projects for you to advance the line for you and your business, right? I think a business plan can be great if you need it. You know, a t-shirt shop, does it need it? Once you start scaling, probably year two, year three, absolutely. Get it on paper. Are you going to sell the business? If you're not going to sell the business, it doesn't really matter because you don't necessarily need equity partners, right? Now, if you go and get a loan, I could talk all day about the necessity of a business plan. I don't think it's something to stress about in the first year. It helps because it gives you an SOP, right? It's a field guide attached to how to accomplish the business. But a lot of veterans don't know those things. So you don't let that be the sticking point to launching a business. If you haven't learned, that's why I went back and got my MBA in small business operations, because I had no clue. I wanted more knowledge. Most veterans don't have a clue because the military share shit doesn't teach us that. Yeah. So don't let that be the stopping point, because we're really good at figuring it out along the way. So figure it out and then go back and recognize it is going to be needed at some point. Do it sooner than later, but find a mentor, find a coach, find somebody that can help you accomplish that, because no different. I was an infantry guy. I didn't know anything about explosives. So you bring in an EOD guy. I didn't know anything about Intel. So I brought an MI guy in. We have a team in the military for a reason. Find your team in this world and accomplish what you're looking to do.
You know, and I think that's great advice, but I also think, you know, you get a guy like me, we have our own t-shirts, you know, we have our own coffee. But I know that I'm not going to be able to compete with Grunt Style on price. I'm not going to be able to compete with Black Rifle Coffee on price point. And that's okay. A lot of people, you know, a lot of veterans or business owners, they really don't pay real attention to analytics. And I didn't really become an analytics guy until I read Russell Brunson's trilogy, the three books that he wrote.
Yep.
And he talks about analytics, how you need to know your analytics. And I didn't, you know, I was with GNC for almost 30 years. And when I sat down with my friend, he still owns one. And I said, who do you think your perfect avatar is? And then we wrote it down. And then when we looked at his analytics, he thought he was marketing to males, but it was mostly females that were buying his products. So, cause he never really looked into the analytics. So, you know, I'm a big sports guy. Now they're going through a lot of people talking about analytics and all that, but talk about, you know, knowing your analytics in your business and especially your margins. Cause a lot of people don't think, oh, I sold 100 t-shirts. Yeah. But you had no margin.
You made $1, so yeah. Cool. You made $100 for a lot of time.
Then you got to pay tax on top of that. So talk a little bit about analytics and knowing your margins.
Yeah, I think the baseline statement attached is you can't grow what you don't track. You have to be tracking things if you actually want to grow them. So analytics can be crucial when it comes to that time, right? Because then you start looking at cash flow analysis. You start looking at the profit margins, the revenue margins. Where's your money going? Where are you spending it? Maybe your top selling product is actually your least profit margin product. So you should actually just cut it out focus elsewhere, and you'll end up making more money for time investment, right? There are several different pieces attached to cash flow analysis that I think are vital. Having those things, if you don't know how to read a P&L and a cash flow statement yourself, have somebody, get somebody, because I agree. I think it's crucial. Again, but I go back to like year two, year three, right? Once you have a foundation built of things going, there's so many things that are so vital before analytics come into play, in my opinion, before analytics come into play. If you're not selling anything, analytics don't matter. If you're selling too much, analytics don't matter at the end of the day. You have to understand where that breaking point is, right? So getting your feet under you first, understanding, you know, getting, I would even say before you even get into analytics, get into a community of like-minded business owners, right? Not necessarily veteran business owners, because veterans, we have a way of thinking the same way. So expand beyond just veteran entrepreneurs. You know, Bunker Labs is good. Four Block is another one that teaches skills. I'm actually a mentor of their cohort going there tonight. Like, there are so many aspects of veterans that are great, but we can be singularly thinking people at times because we're trained similarly. So break into a community of business owners. You know, a veteran that isn't where you want to be probably shouldn't be your mentor. Go find somebody that is already where you want to be and get them to be your mentor. Hire them to be your coach, train you and teach you. Don't be afraid to invest in yourself in that capacity. And then the analytics will start making sense and mattering more. But I think the analysis paralysis and the perfection paralysis hits a lot of veterans. We want this where we're top tier. We, you know, and I see a lot from the academy grads, the guys that, you know, oh, I was Air Force grad and I went to West Point. I'm the top of the top of the top of the top. Yeah, you are when you were in the military. Now, West Point doesn't matter anymore. Mm-hmm. Sorry, hate it for you. Green Berets doesn't matter. You're a SEAL. Cool. Go write a book. Do everything else a SEAL's doing. I can't really say anything as an Army guy and I'm writing a book. But that stuff doesn't really matter in the world. They're not going to buy from you because you're a Navy SEAL unless you happen to be a Goggins or a Jocko, right? So get past that point and like integrate yourself into business and understand like the business world is very different. And just because you're a veteran doesn't mean people are going to buy. Doesn't mean people are going to give you a handout. Doesn't mean you're immediately going to be successful. So I think understanding and learning the way the business world works would be huge. And don't overanalyze. Because numbers can be daunting at times. So don't overanalyze those statistics and the numbers that you're actually looking at.
I totally agree. I have different mentors for different things. You know, I have one mentor because I want to be a better father and husband and I want to be a better father to my three children. So I have a mentor that helps me with that. I have a mentor for my physical body. You know, I have a mentor for, you know, John Lee Dumas is one of my mentors. So I have a different coach or a mentor pretty much for every aspect of my life. Cause I figured, you know, cause I got thrown out of the military first time for being a drug addict. I got back in a second time and I got put out, you know, because of getting hurt. But I realized that success leaves clues. So if I want to be in the top podcasts in the world, I got to start learning what they do and ask them for mentorship. You know, whether I had to invest in John Lee before he would, you know, mentor me. And, you know, there's certain people I had to invest in courses that I've taken, you know, and they mentor me because I bought into them. So they kind of bought into me. But then you get a lot of veterans who are like, bro, but I'm a veteran. It's like, yeah. And what?
Yeah. I made that mistake, man. Let me tell you about JLD. Whew. Does he listen to the show? JLD, yeah. If you're listening, John. One, it was good to see him at the Biltmore at that wedding. We had a blast. Two, that dude ghosted me pre-deployment. My mentor is one of his original mentees, Travis Chapel. Travis
is awesome.
So Travis is the guy that taught me everything podcasting.
He's been on here.
Man, that dude, right? Not a veteran, younger than me by a couple years. He just turned 30, actually. He was at the wedding with us. It was a mutual friend of ours that got married. John showed up. Before deployment, I got out of IBOLIC, the infantry officer school, and then went straight into business ownership. By month two, In iBullock, I started listening to Entrepreneur on Fire, heard Travis go on Entrepreneur on Fire, liked Travis's message more because of networking. I knew I had to build a network. So it just directly applicable to what I was learning. Immediately hit it off with Travis. That was when, in Travis's early days, it was 2016. So in Travis's early days, and he was doing connection calls with every listener. If you leave a comment on his Facebook, he did a connection call with you. Now Guestio just won like the 2-comma award with everything he's doing. So like Travis still crushing it. But in those days, like it was his early days, and he ended up connecting with John at one point right before the deployment. I reached out to John. Hey man, as a fellow veteran, what would you say? I would love to pick your brain. Rookie mistake. I would love to pick your brain as a fellow veteran and learn what am I, you know, how do you juggle business and military? How do you juggle this? I'm heading to Afghanistan. I own this business. I went from making 40K a year as a cop to month 5 of my first business. I made 10,000 in that first month. I'm like, I don't want to give this up. Month 7, I was in Afghanistan. So I reached out to John. Hey man, you're a veteran. You can empathize. Let me pick your brain. If you ever go to somebody and say, hey, let me pick your brain, those words will immediately turn that person off. Like, we understand you just want to have a conversation. But with what John does, John makes a living off of coaching people, teaching people. And I was asking for a favor, and he doesn't know who the hell I am. He didn't have a rapport with me. Even that connection with Travis isn't enough for John to take favor to me, right? Mm-hmm. So he ended up saying, yeah, man, we'll talk sometime or something. I mean, this was years ago on Instagram, right? So we never ended up connecting at that point until I got back from Afghanistan. So that entitlement piece that I had as a mistake, hey, we're veterans, so like you owe me a conversation, was almost the mindset I had. Such a faulty mindset to have because it's arrogant. Like just because you're a veteran doesn't mean you're a good person, doesn't mean you're a success, doesn't mean you're worth that time. I hate to say it like that, but the harsh reality of it is like maybe you're just looking for free handouts because a lot of veterans do that. The veterans that want, oh, give me that discount, you throw a hissy fit because you don't get that discount. We have that entitlement in the younger generation. We have that entitlement. We deserve something because we served. We maybe deserve a thank you and some respect, but that might be about it. And I think that entitlement mindset, like steer clear from that and buy into the room. That month too, I bought into Travis's first mastermind. Coming back from Afghanistan, I bought into a second mastermind. In that second mastermind, it started, I bought into it, $20,000 buy-in, y'all. 20K. I didn't have 20K coming back from Afghanistan. Holy crap. I didn't have any money coming back from Afghanistan. Started it in January of 2020 is when that mastermind started. We all know what happened March, April of 2020. So it even derailed. But out of that mastermind, I met my business partner for the company that scaled to 155 countries. I met the former CEO of John Maxwell. I bought into a room, bet on myself, and have more than 10X'd the return. I have 100X that return by now. Right? Easily. Because I bought into a room that was a higher level than me. I invested in Travis. Travis invested in me. The connections we made, the reason I was at that wedding where John was because Travis invested in me. He made those introductions to me. He started helping me shake hands and getting to know people. I showed up. I asked him, but I bought into his room and said, hey, man, I believe in you. Will you also believe in me? And then I delivered, right? Bet on yourself, buy into the room. And trust me, as veterans, we get that shit done. Right? That's the most beautiful thing about being a veteran. We get stuff done. So when you have that mindset attached to the willingness to learn and the willingness to buy into a room that maybe you don't quite belong in quite yet, you will start belonging in that room and then you'll scale out of that room and do bigger and better things, guaranteed.
You know, and I also was taught, you know, always lead with value. Like if I would have just DM'd you out of nowhere, you not knowing me, not knowing our friends that we have in common. And I'd be like, hey, bro, I got a great podcast. Why don't you come on? You'd probably look at me like, who is this ass clown? But I reached out and our friends, mutual friends reached out. And I said, Zach, I would love to have you to come on the show to talk about your journey and your mission. It's not about me. And I think if we start leading with value, even like Russell talked about, if you get your dream 100, and you lead with value to those people, eventually they're going to get tired of seeing your name and they're going to be like, who is this Richard Kaufman, dude? I want to know who it is because he's always commenting. He bought my book and promoted it for me and I didn't even ask him to do it.
Man, it is so – look, I've had Jordan Harbinger, Brad Lee on my show, Michael Coles, the founder of Great American Cookie Company. And Travis taught me the same method. I got all of them through DMing them on like LinkedIn and Instagram, right? It wasn't even them, it was like their team. But I said, hey, I respect this, did my research, right? With Jordan Harbinger. Hey man, I heard you talk about this on a podcast and this on another podcast. I would love to expand on this because as a veteran, this is really curious to me. Let's talk about that. So I did my research, led with value, come on in. I give everybody that comes on my show about 30 assets because one of my companies is a production company. So we chop up content, right? We constantly chop up content. So I give a ton of assets on the back end. No different than we're going live. You're going to release this on a recorded platform later. That's a ton of value. And if we don't recognize like how much value you're giving me right now for letting me share my story, because my podcast, I don't always get to, right? So starting something like a podcast, literally all of my businesses were built off a backbone of a podcast because it was in COVID. You couldn't go to networking groups. You couldn't build like that. So I just took a step back and went virtual. Here's what I can offer you as a guest on my podcast. Here's what value I want to give to you. Do you mind? And then these conversations end up being like, I wanted to learn more about business. So I brought on high-level business people. I wanted to learn more about self-mastery. So when I was going through my darkest time, you'll hear it right about 2 years ago is when you'll hear my conversation shifted. Teach me the tactics to get my mind right. How do you get your mind right? And you'll actually hear a distinct shift. And I rebranded to the Tactical Leader Podcast, where now it's all about tactics that leaders are bringing forward, not just in business, but in life, because that's where something like this, let me value add and talk about your experience and value add and talk about how you got through something, because there are veterans out there listening. There are people, humans out there listening, because then they were all human beings. We're all struggling with very similar things, just in different capacities, right? So having that value add to say, hey, this is what I want to do to support your cause. I would love to have a conversation about it. If I'd gone with JLD with that instead of, hey, bro, let me pick your brain, I imagine the conversation would be a hell of a lot different back then.
And for me, you know, like I just started the podcast out of shits and giggles. You know, I had nothing else to do. I'm blind. And I figure Anchor, I could do audio. I don't have to do video or anything. So, but then once I started interviewing, the way it started is I lost 80% of my vision. So I can only see a little bit. So I figured I interview people that had it worse than me. Like the first guy I interviewed, he was a quadruple amputee. And he's out skiing with his family in Aspen. And I'm going, wait a minute, I can't see. And I'm feeling sorry for myself. Now, here's a quadruple amputee skiing with his family in Aspen. Maybe there's something to this. And that's how the podcast started. But then I noticed, okay, I don't know anything about business. So if I ask Robert Kiyosaki and Sharon Lecter to come on, they're going to teach me about business. But I can't afford to be in that $10,000 mastermind. Exactly. But because I have a platform, they're willing to come on and teach me. So talk us a little bit about how you started your podcast and what the name of it is and where they can find it.
Man, I mean, I don't really need to say much more. You just kind of said it, man. It was a journey of knowledge, right? I wanted to learn more. I was actually in that mastermind, the second mastermind with Travis. They're like, and it was mostly podcasters. Like that was Travis's sole business, masterminds, coaching, and podcasting. Back then, that was before Guestio, before the software, before he became a tech superstar. And in this mastermind, people are like, hey, Zach, why don't you have a podcast? I'm like, what are you talking about? They're like, yeah, you should totally do one, man. Like you're a Dale Carnegie certified leader. You've lived this life of SWAT and infantry and deployments, and you've done all these things. Have a podcast. I'm like, nobody's going to listen to me. Nobody's going to hear what I have to say. And the best reframing came from Travis. He's like, bro, it's not about you. It's about what you want to learn about. What are you interested in that you can talk a little bit about, but you want to garner more knowledge from? Mm-hmm. And that's where the tactical leader came from. It's not about infantry tactics. It's not about police tactics. Originally, it was business tactics. It was a bunch of CEOs, C-level executives. I want to learn more about business. Then as my mind got worse and things started getting mentally deteriorating for me, it turned into, let me learn about tactics in life. Let me learn about tactics and loving yourself again. My big piece of it is legacy. I've asked every single guest, I'm about to hit episode 400, every single guest, what is the legacy you want to leave on the world? Because I'm fascinated by what legacy is, right? That's why my book is called The Legacy of Love, because there's a legacy attached to loving yourself that will allow you to leave that piece of it. So it became a journey. And they're like, bro, just you're a leader, you're tactical, you love that in business, go learn more about it. start the Tactical Leadership Podcast. And that's what it was originally called, the Tactical Leadership Podcast. And it was, again, I like, okay, whatever, y'all are doing something well, so let me just try to replicate that. And it took off, man. It took off so well. When you can find it all across social media, everything, the Tactical Leader Podcast, it's on all the things. My website attached to it is Be a Tactical Leader. So that's my coaching brand as well. So it's all about how do you be a tactical leader, the how to attach to the tactical leader. So it's a lot of resources attached to everything we've talked about today. Resources there, coaching content, courses, videos, all the things that we all do these days. You'll find a lot of that content there.
Now, since I knew we were going to be talking a couple of weeks ago, I've been binge listening to all your episodes. So if your numbers go up, it's my fault.
Perfect.
You're listening to almost every episode. But you said something earlier that I love. When I got to have lunch with Gary Vaynerchuk here at his father's liquor place, I said, "Gary, give me something to walk away here." And he said, "Rich," he said, "your legacy will always be more valuable than your currency." And that totally changed my life to start thinking, you know, what is my legacy? Every decision I make is going to affect my legacy, either good or bad. So is that something you're talking about? What do you mean by legacy?
Absolutely. Simon Sinek's book, Start With Why, is phenomenal. It got me started on this journey, but I think there's another piece to it, right? And there's another piece that I like talking about is ending with why. How do you end with why? And that is legacy, the definition behind it, which is why I have actually a series of books planned out for the next 2 years, all around legacy, what it is, why you need it, legacies of leaders, legacies of love, legacy in general. If you're not thinking long term, you're not thinking big enough. If you're not thinking about what's going to be here when you're gone, because we all have been really damn close to being gone really quickly, right? If they're not going to leave anything behind, what are you doing? What are you leaving behind for your family, your significant others, your children? I don't have any kids, but that doesn't stop me from thinking I want to leave something behind for somebody. The veteran community is why I'm starting this 501c. I want to leave something behind for veteran business owners that weren't afforded the opportunity I had. But now that I have that opportunity, I want to pay it forward. And that's a big legacy piece for me, is I've garnered knowledge and success. Let me pay that forward and help others advance the line, because too often we don't have that capability to advance the line ourselves. So let's team up. Let's do this together. And I think legacy is like the ultimate driving force behind what everything I'm doing. Absolutely.
All right. So last couple of minutes, I want to ask you, and thank you for taking the time. I know we gone a little bit longer than I normally do, but I feel like I can just talk to you all day. So I just want to say thank you so much. You know, one of my friends, James Clear, wrote the book Atomic Habits. And you talk, you know, I've listened now a couple of things on LinkedIn that you talk about. You talk about, you know, you're owning and ruling your day, you're ruling your nighttime rituals, ruling your morning rituals. So talk a little bit about how, you know, because even James says that you got to stack your wins, but you have to, you know, prepare the night before you go to bed for the next morning. And then when you get up the next morning, prepare for your day. And for me, it starts with gratitude and it ends with gratitude. So talk about, you know, what your thoughts on are your rituals.
Yeah, that's such a phenomenal question, because I do talk about it a lot. You know, a fellow veteran, Admiral McRaven, released a video years ago, at a commencement speech, talking about make your bed in the morning, start your day, yeah. You know, start your day off with a win. I think that's freaking huge. I still get up at 4 a.m. every day. Weekends, I sleep in until 6 or so. But it gives me the time before people start calling and clients start happening, life starts happening, to set my intentionality for the day. I think intentionality, I mean, it's my word of the year, my word of the century, my word, attentionality. What are you doing with every aspect of your day, from meetings to podcasting to business to your morning? For me, I start with gratitude as well. I write three things I'm grateful for in the mirror every day. I do that because when I go into the bathroom every single day, I see it. So at the end of the night, when I'm brushing my teeth, going to bed, there are those three things I'm still grateful for. It's a constant reminder. And we need that sometimes. Every day I have a rotation of different things, from journaling, reading, playing the piano, that I have integrated. I think all of those things are valuable. Meditation is another piece of it that it kind of rotates each day, but fitness, every single day I'm in the gym. I don't take a day off from the gym. I don't believe in rest and recovery and all that other nonsense. Maybe Goggins is where I get more Goggins-like. But every day I'm in the gym. Some days I perform less. Some days I perform better, but I'm giving 100%. I have to be there. It's the one thing that has been a constant for me, even in losing use of the arm compared to what I had. The next day after surgery, I got out of surgery at 6 p.m. At 5 a.m. the next day, I was in the gym, walking on a damn treadmill, bandaged up, still high as a kite. I have to. It sets my mind right for the day. But I think the biggest thing that was a shift, I heard this on a podcast and I cannot remember for the life of me who said it, but everybody know that alarm, the wah, 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 stupid alarm in the mornings? Change that shit. Change it to something that gets you hype. My hype song is Eye of the Tiger, the Rocky theme song. Every single morning, I wake up to Eye of the Tiger. Every time I get on stage, Eye of the Tiger. Every morning at the gym, I make the trainer, Eye of the Tiger. If you see me starting to struggle on the treadmill, because I hate running, I'm 225 pounds. I'm not ideal infantry running guy, right? Hit Eye of the Tiger. It motivates the hell out of me. I don't know what it is. I love it. Start your day there. Set your phone to an alarm that makes you wake up and smile and laugh. I get out and do the arm fist. I was able to speak at a conference in Philly this past July. Did the stairs like 4 times. Took photos at the statue with Rocky. Like, it was such a great moment for me because it gets me so hype. If you can start your day smiling like that because of the intentionality you've taken to set your day up, there's no way you're about to lose that day. I absolutely love it. I'll ramble all day about this. I love that piece of my day.
No, and I love that. For me, I'm a sensitive guy. I'm the biggest wussy you'll ever meet. My wife makes fun of me because I'll watch all the chick flicks, you know. But when I wake up in the morning, my daughter wakes me up. My 9-year-old daughter wakes me up with butterfly kisses every morning. She kisses me on my cheek every morning. That knows that, hey, I got to get up. I got shit to do because I got a daughter to take care of. So for me, that's my motivation. But like before I go speak on stages or whatever, I listen to Eminem, Lose Yourself. Cause that gets me pumped, or I put on some Five Finger Death Punch and I'm ready to go.
Old school stuff. I love that.
Bro, I'm just so grateful. You said you got a book coming out on around Veterans Day.
Yes. Yes. That is actually in pre-sale right now. I'm trying to get it cranking, trying to market it, trying to talk about it. You can actually find that information at ZachAKnight.com, just like what's on the screen right here. It's my name. So ZachAKnight.com, doing the pre-sale. It's coming out Veterans Day, all about it. It's called The Legacy of Love, A Journey of Self-Mastery. And it highlights my journey, but also highlights the tactics I used to get through my darkest time.
I know. I definitely want an autographed copy. So Zach, I just want to say thank you, brother. Guys, make sure you check him out on Instagram at Zach A. Knight. He's got a great Instagram page. So I've been all over today. Make sure you check him out on Facebook, on LinkedIn. He's everywhere. Check out his podcast. Totally awesome. You're going to take a couple hours. You're going to want to binge listen to it because that's what I did. And I got so much information. And I think I'm going to contact some of the people that you've had on this show, invite them on my show. So
let me know. Zach, send them your way.
Brother, I just want to say thank you. And I'm so grateful that you were able to take this time and hang out with us today.
Absolutely. I appreciate you, brother. And thank you for letting me share my story.
I love it, brother. So guys, just remember, OVF, if you guys want to learn how to start a business, check us out. If you want coffee, check it out. But you know, like my t-shirt says, today I decide. Those are the three most important words in the English language. You can make the decision to be a victor or a victim. It's all up to you. And you don't have to be the same person that when you go to bed tonight as the same person that woke up this morning. It's up to you to change. And like Booker T. Washington once said, you want to help. If you want to help yourself, help somebody else. All right, guys, I love you. I'll catch you guys tomorrow. Remember, vertical momentum. The only way to go is but up. Zach, I love you, brother. Have an amazing week.
You too. Thanks, brother.
Hey guys, if you're enjoying our show, If you love what we're doing, if you would like to support us, we have a whole bunch of great stuff coming out. We have a brand new t-shirt line that's coming out. Hats, coffee mugs, any kind of swag that lets your friends know that you support Vertical Momentum and you're always looking to get better. Also, we have our new coffee brand coming out. It's called Vertical Momentum Coffee. It's ass-kicking coffee. And it will get you moving in the morning. So guys, if you're interested, go to www.richardkaufman.net. Check us out. Leave us a note. Tell us what you'd like, and we'll actually send it to you. The new website is being built. So if you guys want to, our book is out there on Amazon. It's called A Hero's Journey from Darkness to Light. Definitely check it out. It talks about my story, but it also talks about how to survive depression, how to survive addiction. All right, guys, I love you. Thank you so much for always supporting our mission, which is to save lives.
Thank you for joining us today. Please hit subscribe and share. Please feel free to leave us a comment.